SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com, where with each passing day, we solve more of your problems when it comes to, when it comes to the player, the, you know, whatever you listen online to. And there, thanks to Tom at Gapman down in South Florida, there's now an external player if you're still having trouble. And I guess it kind of had boiled down to iPhone users, I think. That seemed to be the last issue. And so Tom's got this external. You click on that external link, and that should solve the problem. If not, let us know. But again, if you're having a problem, you can't hear me. So you'll hear it on the archive tonight and then make your move. I don't know. You know that I'm the worst when it comes to this. This is not my strength, but, everybody has been, yeah, the stream company and the web guy and everything else. So looking forward to the weekend more and more, and actually another big opening day. Another opening day Friday, last week, Santa Anita with the two-year-olds, and this Friday, Keeneland. And there are two-year-olds involved, of course, the Alcibiades, the grade one on Friday. If you didn't see what went on at the entry box, you just wonder what and how it is that, you know, some of these races, and Andy brought this up yesterday, that he made me laugh, boy. That whole thing with Promises Fulfilled, who had a chance to run in the grade one Vosburgh and then opts for the grade two Phoenix for a lot less money. And I don't know. I mean, why did Patrick run Diamond Oops here instead of in the Vosburgh? It's very strange to some degree. And Promises Fulfilled, obviously the major player here. However, you've got Recruiting Ready that turned up, and, you know, that allowance that Stan Huff used as a tune-up, certainly impressive. Notable that Recruiting Ready is 0-for-2 at Keeneland. Promises Fulfilled 2-for-2, including last year's Phoenix, of course. Hog Creek Hustle, who's going to have to dial it up one more notch. You know, Diamond Oops is very nice and ran that very good second in the Vanderbilt behind Imperial Hint. And it could be that Patrick just, you know, wanted to avoid Imperial Hint, I guess. Whitmore makes his anticipated return. Pointed for this and working well, including a 59 flat bullet on September 12th. Moquette and company in that spot. There's a couple of other, it's a nice enough field, for certainly. Nobody's questioning the field. Jim Chapman brings back Hartwood, who, of course, went out in September to that sprint race in Korea at Seoul. Kind of split the field, and he's got a win on the PPs at Keeneland. Lexingtonian, Jack Sisterson's upsetter of the Chick Lang, did win the concern at Laurel and does have a win at 6 furlongs, but it I don't know. That was the Chick Lang, actually, and I don't know. You get the sense that Lexingtonian, that this is a deep, you know, deep water for a 3-year-old facing Elders for the first time. The Alcibiades came up kind of fun. And a little mix and match from several regions of the country and from several surfaces. In fact, on the outside of this group going the mile and a 16th, three horses, Wesley Ward, Mark Cassie, and Vicky Oliver, all coming off of turf races, going 6.5. And, you know, two of them come out of Kentucky Downs. How ironic for Vicky Oliver. And Sequin for Wesley Ward. Western Taffy, the Chiefswood homebred for Cassie, comes out of a good second chasing Fire Maiden in the Catch a Glimpse. Then you've got, you know, horses, another turf horse that's really notable in here, making a dirt debut. Michael Stidham has got the Godolphin homebred, the Bernardini filly out of Panty Raid, Micheline. And she gets Lasix here for her third start, and she moves turf to dirt. Has every right to, you know, with that, you know, certainly with that breeding, she's got every right to run well on the dirt. Shug separates his good two-year-old fillies. Mrs. Danvers will run in New York. Alondra runs here for Mrs. Alexander and Groves, and their homebred by Blame out of Altes, the AP Indy mare, winner at First Asking at Saratoga, going 7/8, the old Shug go-to. Yeah. Alondra at 15-2. She could be stretching out here, second start. There's a few doing that. Brad Cox, too, with British Idiom, who I don't think we even got to British Idiom when we talked to Brad in that most recent visit. Going back, was it last week? 2 weeks? British Idiom never came up. Anyway, it's a nice group. Norm Cassie has got his last out maiden winner, Heir of Light, for Pat Masterson and Crystal Spring. Perfect Alibi, who is just a scrapper. You want to talk about a horse that's already proven her mettle and you know, kind of a street fighter type. The Pin Oak bred $220,000 purchase by Tracy Farmer, that backed up the Adirondack with the big spin-away win at the end of the spa session. So, really fun. Phil D'Amato, and Phil didn't bring up Spitefulness, actually, and he puts the blinkers on her, the Palace Malice filly, for Agave and Rockin' Robin, and we'll round out the field. Amos on the rail, Gone Glimmering, a Tapiture filly that's 2-for-2 at Indiana. And 3D Flag, Mike Rutherford's Clear Sky bred Super Saver filly that broke her maiden at Ellis over next out winner Joysom. So, and she's actually come out of a couple of key races, and on paper she's going to look, you know, kind of as a secondary consideration. But I don't know, it might be more to her than meets the eye. It's a very fun field for the Alcibiades on Friday, and then the rest of the card, if you haven't checked it yet, maiden races, in fact, maiden races. There's a split division, I think the 7th and 10th, of two-year-old fillies on the grass going a mile that drew 32 entries. 32. Yeah. Yeah, the 7th and the 10th going a mile. And nice mix of first-timers, second-timers, etc. And they, frankly, both divisions look kind of murky. They didn't feel like there was a lot to grab onto. They'll draw today for the Shadwell, for the Breeders' Futurity, the First Lady, the TCA, and that Woodford. The Rusty Arnold, Totally Boss, is going to train straight up to Breeders' Cup. But he's got Leinster in there, does Rusty, and Imprimis for Joe Orsino and more. The Spinster Sunday, along with the Bourbon and the new two-year-old turf sprint, that Indian summer. Feels like Indian summer right here. It is so, Tina and I woke up, it was like so humid and clammy and warm. Indian summer. And I you know, I'm not somebody that tracks the you know, the this kind of thing. But has anybody noticed? Did I bring this up last year? That they've changed the name of Indian corn, candy corn. You know, there's candy corn with the yellow bottom. Then there's Indian corn with the chocolate bottom. And I'm a sucker for, I love mellow creams. And always have loved mellow creams. And circus peanuts. I like circus peanuts too. But they've changed the name. Was it derogatory to call it Indian corn? The little candy corns that were chocolate flavored? Now they're harvest corn. And in the meantime, at least here locally, they get a delivery of it with the Halloween candy, with the fall, you know, the fall candy. And it's like the first case sells out and then it's gone. And you're left with candy corn. And, you know, as I've gotten older, my tastes have gotten a little more sophisticated, kind of shifted from candy corn to the Indian corn. I don't know about you, but yeah, they must have been. I guess it was derogatory to call it Indian corn. They did it very quietly. It's like they disappeared for like 1 year. You couldn't even get it, and then it came back last year, and I saw that the name had been changed. Just an aside. Let me give you what's going on today, and. I can tell you what's going on tonight, by the way. Tina and I have gone through an exercise here the last 2.5-3 weeks. She was so excited about the Downton Abbey movie. So we had to watch all 6 seasons of Downton Abbey to get refreshed, you know, to get it fresh in our minds. So, and I had seen bits and pieces when she was watching it the first time. And I had missed chunks. I mean, I think she did it during a winter because she didn't watch it when it was on TV. We didn't watch from when it first was introduced on Masterpiece Theater. We watched it later on. And I missed, you know, certain sections of it. So I watched along the last 2.5 weeks. So we watched the last several episodes last night. And now we're ready to go see the Downton Abbey movie. She's like jumping out of her skin. Yeah. So that I can tell you that's what's happening tonight. She gets home from school. Today, Chuck Simon's going to join us first, and Chuck is going to address what's going on in South Florida. It's that season you wait for all year. It's the Calder portion of the South Florida schedule, October, November, before things return to Gulfstream. And if you haven't been paying attention to this, we've touched on it a little bit earlier in the summer, and actually only even knew what was happening courtesy of Tom Ventura at OBS going back to that visit in March, where Churchill and the Calder Casino were trying to maneuver a way to not have to operate the racetrack or even lease it out. And they built a Hi-Li Fronton. And are trying to substitute that to meet their conditions of their license. Chuck will explain to you what went on. There was a court ruling the other day, but it actually, and it didn't get a lot of fanfare, but there's a lot of money at risk here for owners and horsemen in South Florida. This is actually a big story that's gotten zero attention. So Chuck will explain what transpired and what happens next. Pete Fornatale will swing through. We'll talk to Pete about the weekend. Actually headed to Brooklyn after we're going to the races on Saturday. We're going to the big Saturday card. We're looking forward to the champagne and the Joe Hirsch, etc. And then we're going to go see the Abbott brothers at the Barclay Center in Brooklyn, which I'm really looking for. I've wanted to see them for ages. And Trampled by Turtles are in the Capital District next Saturday. So a lot of folk music coming our way. Sid Fernando coming your way. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Talk to Sid. We'll wrap up the yesterday's day two at Timonium. Bill Downs from Indiana. Seth Merrow from Capital OTB. And more. Oh, I got Maine. I got stuff from Maine to talk to Seth about, too. Just getting going. Chuck joins us first at the races. Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horseville.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horseville.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horseville.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Under the island, middle of a mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground the Puget Sound. Causing a shifting and a drifting. Big black boombox stuck in the hot rod. It's in there flowing, it's in there growing. I don't believe me that this scenery could be a cold-blooded killer. It's gonna blow.
We're back in the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Wednesday, and Volcano from the President of the United States, it's a good intro because Chuck Simon is sort of Mount St. Helens with feet. Chuckles, good morning.
There'll be no eruptions this morning.
No? Nothing? Really? All right, because you are capable.
I've been beaten down by the South Florida traffic enough where I just there's just not much of a fight left in me.
Well, you know, whatever happened when Javier Castellano got the key to the city of Hallandale, he was supposed to take care of things. He was supposed to fix the traffic.
He was. And I got to tell you that Hallandale's traffic is actually better. Thank you, Javier, for taking care of that. But everywhere else sucks. So, and part of the problem is self-inflicted because people seem to crash here a lot. But you know, that's part of the adventure.
Well, you got people. You got. Elderly that can't see over the dashboard of the LeSabre, and then you've got, you know, like 18-year-old kids hot rodding around. It's a recipe for disaster.
It is, but you know, we get sun and we have nice temperatures and we don't get snow. So, you know, for every yin there's a yang, and that's our yang.
Well, just keep your wits about you if you go to any farmers markets, because. you got me in a great mood, Chuck. I have to reach out to you because, as you know, basically the face and the voice of and the embodiment of the Florida HBPA, the story last week that emerged, and I only started hearing about it from Tom Ventura earlier in the winter, and this involves Churchill and the Calder Casino and their interests and efforts to not have to even bother leasing out the racetrack to Stronach Group for these two-month Calder meets, the Gulfstream West. And the court ruling from last week seems a little murky and hard to comprehend. But there's a lot of money at stake. And explain to everybody what's going on here.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night, so bear with me if this is a little simplistic, but essentially the ruling last week was that Calder can have a highlight. They can convert. It's a one piece of a process, though. There's a lawsuit that was obviously a lot less publicized that we won this early this summer, late spring, concerning the building. And the casino law read that there had to be a attached building to the casino, meaning a racing facility and a casino facility had to be attached. Churchill Downs, they tore the grandstand down, meaning there was no longer a building to even be attached. And they tried to their contention was that the sidewalk, which connected the now, basically an apron of a track without any building, and the casino, that counted according to the law. We did not agree, and we actually won that lawsuit. And as a matter of fact, I believe initially the division said that it did meet the standards. And we sued them along with OBS and the Florida Breeders. So it's not just us.
Right.
It's the other stakeholders in Florida who are all disagreeing with these contentions. And that case is on appeal. And but according to Steve Scrunchie, who's the president of HGPA, who is a lawyer, and Brad Daly, who's our counsel on this case, most of the time, those cases that are appealed can only be appealed on procedural error if the judge made some sort of procedural error, and they say that it's a very basic case. It wasn't that complicated. The procedure was very cut and dry, and it's more of a delaying tactic probably than anything. So, you know, there's that ties into this last case, and our contention is that they didn't meet the requirement to apply for HILI, and that there's a 2-year waiting period for a new for a new term mutual license to get a casino, and obviously they would want that waived, and we are also contesting that. So, I mean, honestly, Steve, in the end, Calder is going to probably go away regardless of how these cases turn out. There's going to be some changes in the South Florida program because the Calder is barely a viable facility as it is. It's not fun to go to the races there. It's hot. There's no place to really go. They have their little tents, and it's very difficult to watch the races. The videos shown there are actually on an 8 or 9 second delay, but you're hearing the call before the actual screen shows the horses moving, and it's very difficult to watch because you know that the race is off and things are going on because you hear it, and you're looking at a TV screen. It's not showing anything, and it's not showing what the announcer's calling. And because there's no building, it's hard to get up high enough to see over the hedge on the backside. So it's an uncomfortable place. There's no real facilities for dining. There's no, you know, there's a one food truck.
So it's not a festival then. It's not a food truck festival, unless it's a one truck festival.
Yeah, you remember the movie Scarface? In the beginning, yeah. When they're all the Stevens have got sent across. You know, they sent all the they opened the prisons up and they sent all the people, and they were camped under I-95, and it's kind of reminiscent about that. I mean, it's just not a fun place to go. It just isn't. And clearly Churchill doesn't want us anymore. Clearly we don't want to have a 2-month gap in the schedule here. Clearly we don't want to lose the revenue. And at some point in the near future, all of these things are going to converge, and hopefully we can come to some sort of agreement. We can come up with some sort of plan and, you know, work with the Stronach Group management to try to, you know, figure out a racing schedule here. And Mike Lakehow is brand new, like second pay on the job down here. So Mike's a great guy. Mike's an excellent racing official, racing secretary. He's got experience, my experience. He's a straight shooter, and it's good to have him here. And you know, Billy Badgett has come over from track management side to work for us. He's been hired as the executive director for the Florida Horse and Bullet Person Association. So having Billy is great too, because Billy, you know, was a trainer, a very very successful trainer for a long period of time, and he now has a lot of insight on the management side. And so we have some good people here. It's going to be a challenge, of course, because you have one group, which is Churchill, which is doing everything they can to get out of here. So, you know, those 400 stalls that we still have at Calder, it sounds like, well, it's just only 400 stalls, but those are 400 horses that race. I mean, there's no one over there with a showplace barn, you know, parading around. Those are all racehorses. Those horses, they're meat and potato horses. They run a lot. So finding spots for them to lose 400 stalls, that's an issue, along with the race dates themselves losing so many dates. Truthfully, we live in an era now where horsemen, despite the comments to the contrary, we understand that we are not going to be able to just run as many dates as possible and run as many races as possible. And we're aware that with the full crop productions and such, that the supply of horses is not as strong as it was, and we're going to have to make concessions, and we're going to have to come up with a schedule that makes sense for everyone, a best-case scenario of a schedule, not just the most races, because the industry continues to shrink. And it's funny because some people have just, like now, figured out, hey, the industry is contracting. Well, the industry has been contracting for about 30 years. But now we're at the point where you have places like Calder that are going to go away for good eventually. And, Arlington, Turfway, these are traditional tracks that have been around for a long time. And when you keep chipping away and keep losing these areas, and I understand Hawthorne will probably pick up some of the slack for Arlington, and Churchill is proposing a new track to more or less replace Turfway, but it's different, and it's a new era that we're having to deal with the constant attack on racing, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out then.
A couple of things about this, Chuck, because there's a lot of money involved here. And, in terms of the horse population, at the very least, South Florida, seems to have this. I mean, just the fact that Stronach Group and the Gulfstream calendar has been able to sustain racing effectively year round is noteworthy to begin with. And field size, has really not been an issue, even after Florida Derby, when everybody leaves town, at least everybody that, that's going to return to New York and Kentucky and the Mid-Atlantic, those that winter down there, the numbers are, $7-8 million of contribution. Is it basically just going to end up being a negotiation between the parties involved here ultimately, and how much, how much room is there to negotiate here? Because Churchill's track record on this kind of a situation is, everybody can read the PPs.
Well, it's hard to have any kind of meaningful discussions when you're suing each other. Obviously, because of litigation, it's tough to talk about things. So, to me, it's clear, and this is obviously just my opinion, that Churchill is wanting to get out of this market no matter what, and they're not concerned with racing here. But that's, that's business. We can cry about it all we want, but the fact of the matter is that they're a corporation that is a bottom line company, and even though there are things that they do that they blame on the bottom line that probably don't need to be done, that is going to be their tact. And you have Hialeah, which we would hope at some point may be able to come back into the fold and run real races, but they've been running fake races there. Let's face it, and a lot of that is the state allowed that to happen. The state is allowed because of the laws are kind of nebulous here and they're not exact. They've allowed these phony races to be built, to be run in this Oxford Downs place, which is these,
right.
It's just an end around to get a card room there. Those are difficult when you're fighting. And people are critical of the horsemen often, And believe me, in the past, there's been a lot of things that horsemen have done, horsemen groups that have been short-sighted, that haven't really taken into consideration the game in general, just our take on it. And that can be said for the racetracks, that can be said for the commissions, that can be said for the jockeys, that can be said for virtually the breeders. Virtually every group in this business has at one point made decisions that probably could have been a little bit different, could have been a little more open-minded, could have been given a little bit more and taken a little bit less, but it is what it is at this point. How do we get to a situation, an optimal situation or an optimal amount of dates and use where the racetrack can justify their investment in us? I don't know. I mean, that's a difficult thing to do. It's hard to get people to have a meeting, let alone get everyone together to have a meeting. So, looking forward to the future, it's very murky. It's tough to figure exactly how this is going to work. And then you throw sports betting in. The amount of strength that the Seminoles have here, that's just these X factors that we just don't know how that's going to work. It's not an easy thing to do, but we've been criticized as horsemen and horsemen's groups in the past, sometimes justly, sometimes unjustly. But people also have to remember, we're just good players here. We don't have staffs of hundreds of people. We don't have 12 lawyers on our beck and call, and we don't have marketing. We don't have we're just a small operation. I mean, the board of the FACPA is a 15-member board, but it's a volunteer board. And, I mean, these are trainers and owners, and some of which are very sharp people and have done a really good job donating their time, donating their ideas, their experiences, and helping. But we fight a little bit of an uphill battle as horsemen, and this is not just here. This is everywhere. And trickle down is worth billions of dollars. Santa Cruz is worth billions of dollars. Some of these other racetracks are worth the big organizations, and we're not. I mean, it's a tough fight for us to have to do. And I think at some point in the past, racetracks, and I understand. Listen, we can all say, "Well, slots killed racing, blah blah blah." But if we were just strictly competing against slots and we weren't getting any revenue from them, we probably would have all been gone a long time ago. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation in regards to alternate gaming and this and that. And of course, there's arguments that we haven't best used the funds, which is probably true in some cases. But it's kind of like, where are we and where are we going? And in this particular market, once these lawsuits are finally settled and we kind of have a better idea of what's going to happen, well, then maybe we can map out a plan. But Gulfstream's big signal is very strong. People bet it. The guys down here, the trainers run. There's not a lot of guys that just train and pick their spots. There's a lot of real racehorse trainers here, and that's been borne out by the handle and the field size. But that's that's going to be a tougher thing too. I know there was empty Florida Saratoga this year. I mean, that if you told me when I first started training there'd be empty Florida Saratoga, I'd have thought you would would have had you committed. But that's the truth. And places like Saratoga can have barns that aren't full. Well, hell, it can happen anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and part of that also is, the developments in other parts of the country that, the Ellis's stability and not just stability, but, the improved racing landscape, basically. I mean, when guys like Dale Romans and Mark Cassie and Ken McPeak, et cetera, are leaving pricey 2-year-old maidens to run at Ellis instead of bringing them to Saratoga. That, you know, that that's a reality that has happened. You know, you got to, right now you got a Breeders' Cup juvenile favorite in Dennis's Moment that, you know, that started his career at Ellis, and so it's a, you know, this is a gigantic ecosystem that, you know, that kind of moves and shapes, you know, and one, you know, one thing happens in a marketplace, and it affects, you know, the ripple effects are sizable. I mean, look at, you talk about the Chicagoland situation. I mean, all you got to do is look at Indiana and then Ohio out of nowhere. I mean, Ohio hadn't even been seemingly rumored to, you know, to bolster their racing businesses with gaming. And then all of a sudden, there it was. And all of a sudden, you know, there was new racetracks in Ohio. I mean, and so the pressure is going to come from somewhere, and it's going to be exerted in one direction, and somebody's going to benefit, and somebody else is going to be put, you know, either back on their heels or are going to have to respond. It just, you know, that's the, you know, the give and take.
Well, you know, and it's like you said about the Ellis Park situation, the ecosystem, is that, you know, there's so many other variables that exist. For instance, Kentucky Downs, which only runs 5 days a week, a year, has lobbied for more dates, has been fought successfully to not get those dates by the other racetracks in the state. Now they're going to face competition from a track that Churchill's building, a harness track that's the harness horsemen in Kentucky didn't ask for. But Kentucky Downs contributes money towards Ellis Park's purses. So if they're injured financially because of the competition, well, it'll trickle down to Ellis because obviously they won't have quite as much money to be able to give away, if any. It's kind of, you know, there's always interrelated things. We were talking the other day about how Christmas Day at Calder used to be one of their biggest days because, you know, there's a lot of people down here who aren't Catholic yet. And there wasn't a lot of stuff that would go on, and you know, the Christmas Day handicap, and they, yeah, I was there in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, and there'd be 10, 12,000 people at Calder on Christmas Day, and, you know, that can't happen anymore because no other tracks are open. And so even if you had, I mean, Calder essentially doesn't exist anymore, but even if you had a big crowd without simulcasting and 90% of your money is coming from outside your live handle, you just can't run a race. You know, you can't run that day. And it's just, you know, how things have changed, and the dependency of a track on other markets to support the track. It's something that, you know, probably wasn't foreseen when simulcasting itself was set up. It wasn't set up properly in the way things have evolved. Obviously, they evolved for a reason. Some of the third-party ADWs that have come in and kind of, you know, filled in the gaps that no one could have imagined they would have existed. And it's just the one thing about this business, and it's different than other sports, because other sports are all managed centrally, and this sport basically can't be managed centrally, no matter what people want, or no matter what we all desire. It just can't be. So that's an issue. The only way, you know, we're trying to get this regulation, and I've said a million times, and I don't want to get into it again, but it's just, if the rules are all the same, that's not going to make people bet more. It's not going to make our races more attractive. It just isn't. It's like saying that, you know, if the American League dropped a designated hitter, the ratings for baseball would go through the roof. Well, it's just not true. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, the ratings for baseball have slumped kind of like the ratings for horse racing. And the popularity has kind of mirrored it, where both of these were the two number one sports in our country in the 60s, and now they're not. And, you know, both of them have similar issues. The pace of the game.
between baseball versus, you know, length of the card and horse racing. And, you know, baseball pitchers used to pitch more, and there wasn't so much specialization, and kind of racing has got to the same thing where, you know, we see an overabundance of turf sprints. And it's a tough thing, though, because baseball is ruled by, you know, the owners, and everyone's an employee of the owner, but racing, it's not. I mean, virtually everyone's an independent contractor. Even the racetracks are, you know, they're independent. They work independent of each other, most of them. So it's just a very tough fix in this business, very, very tough fix. And, you know, there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes that people don't know. And honestly, they're really not that interesting. I mean, it's just, you know, well, these lawsuits are tedious, you know, things that maybe lawyers enjoy them, but for the rest of us, they're just,
yeah.
You know, they're just, it's part of the landscape, but you know, it's not that interesting. But by the same token, you know, we just do occasionally get blindsided. I mean, it's hard to get blindsided. This is one of the worst times. But you know, the Arlington thing with Churchill, that was kind of like, you know, this is exactly what they had asked for years.
Exactly.
So, exactly. You know, and as a horseman, you say to yourself, well, you know what, this new track around Turfway sounds great, but by the same token, look at Calder, look at Arlington. So, you know, it's, and this is not just the best system, it just happens to be the most crushable at the current time. So, you know, where do we go as an industry from here? I don't know, Steve. I don't know. I know one thing, that if the standard is going to be like it's set in California now, where every single time something happens to a horse, there's going to be an uproar, that's a very difficult environment in which to work with, because, I mean, Del Mar was amazing that they were able to get through the meet without any, you know, afternoon breakdowns, but that's an aberration. That's just not, you know, like, you could be a great driver and have a perfect driving record and get in an accident today. It's just, things happen. And, you know, I mean, even something that involved the horse clipping heels or falling out of the gate or spooking from something going over the rail. I mean, it's not just a horse, you know, injuring their leg that can cause that, or even a heart attack. Which, you know, when it actually is happening, is an ugly, you know, ugly thing. It's not a pretty thing, but some of these, just, you know, it's almost not preventable. So
sure.
So that's part of the problem lies with the industry, in that we did a poor job of explaining what we are. And we've not done the greatest job in policing. And this is an irony that I think people don't even understand. But a lot of the reforms, the horsemen are not against. We are really not against a lot of things that could be done. I mean, there's always going to be guys that cry. There's always going to be, you know, the radical people that are, you know, against everything. But a lot of these things, we really don't have a big issue with most of these changes. And I've seen a couple articles written about the LASIKs with the ACP, the National ACPA's petition that had more than 800 people sign, including myself, about LASIKs, because LASIKs has been dragged into a topic of breakdowns that it just doesn't belong in. And, you know, there's this idea that the public, you know, is outraged about that. This isn't true. It's all made up stuff. And it's just not, you know, you want to have a negotiation, you want to have a compromise, well, fine, but you have to be able to have both sides be honest and with each other, and you know, owners are the ones that pay the bills. Owners are the ones that pay the bet bills. Owners are the ones that are affected when their horse becomes a chronic leader and it's losing value and it's no longer able to compete as much or at as high a level as possible. That's not, it's not just the trainers. Believe me, if you could come up with pots like a you know, the people take the fat smoke and cigarettes, and you could put it on a horse and it would make them stop bleeding. Everybody in the world would use it. Not a horseman alive would be like, oh no, I still want laces. but nothing else has come up, and that's one of the other problems. Is we don't spend money researching things. We don't spend money
doing things. I mean, we do, but it's a minuscule amount compared to how much is probably needed.
Well, that's actually been an issue that has been really under discussed, which is the funding of state agencies and their ability to right now they're under fire. I mean, that was the motivation of the most recent activity of journalist alleged journalism attacking the industry. That was exactly, the motivation was to attack CHRB, a lot of criticisms are absolutely 100% valid. But as always, as always, when these topics arise, it's got to be done with a carpet bombing initiative. That's the first thing is let's level everything in sight, and then somehow we'll extract our agenda and implement that. That seems to be the motivation. And you've discussed it for years that it's contributed, more than contributed, it's created a lot of the atmosphere of derision toward horsemen and toward the industry and in general. Chuck, I got to pull up, but I wanted to get this in about what is going on down there and what the next steps were going to be. So we'll keep watching. In the meantime, the unique meet at Calder starts now, and it's still racing, and it's still nice to break a maiden or win a race. So a couple
nice
of months.
It's nice to win wherever you win.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want to take your wind picture and get the hell out of that place. So.
Chuck Simon, as always, everybody, appreciate it. Cannon Shell on Twitter and Florida HBPA. We'll see where this goes. Chuck, thanks.
You got it, Steve.
I appreciate it. Chuck Simon. Take a quick break. Come right back. Pete Fornatel going to swing through and got a few things to tell you about, including I mentioned in passing that maiden NHC qualifier that's going to come up in October. And got formal details just yesterday. It's going to be on the 19th, 2 weeks from Saturday. If you've never qualified to NHC, this is restricted company. That'll be on Saturday the 19th. And there's a couple of feeders for it. There's three feeders for it, actually. So we'll talk to Pete next. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
We're back at the races and just off with Chuck Simon. Always, always interesting. And dealing with this unusual set of circumstances. For those of you that never had a chance to go to Calder when it, you know, when it was fully functioning and, you know, in its heyday. You really miss something. Calder was between the sale, between the March sale, and which really heralded the, you know, the whole 2-year-old and training environment. That was always a great week, and that dining room up on the top floor. That was a really nice scene, and a day at Calder was. It was really pleasant. I don't know. It's a little frustrating, to say the least. Pete Fornatale steps in. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. Always interesting to hear what Chuck has to say. Definitely a strong voice, a lot of strong opinions, and well articulated.
That's our guy. That's Chuck, and serving the, you know, the owners and. And has got a horseman in South Florida, and has got, you know, a complete understanding from, you know, from every perspective, including from the bettors' perspective. I mean, Chuck, University of Arizona grad, and you know, his time around harness, and then into thoroughbred, and you know, he's operated at the highest levels, and you know, understands, and not only understands he. You know, I've been close to Chuck for almost 20 years, and he was way ahead of a lot of the issues that, that have come to, you know, to really vex the industry. He was talking about literally 15 years ago and trying to warn, and there was, you know, there were a lot of deaf ears, but that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons that he's doing what he's doing right now. That he you know, he turned the stable over to Susan Ditter, and she's doing the training on a day to day basis. And he, you know, because he's working full time with the HBPA, and it's one of the most important venues in the country, in Florida. So we'll follow that story. Meanwhile, following everything going on. From your perspective, and with Keeneland drawing yesterday, Pete, that always puts the spurs to the fall.
I'm super excited, Steve. I fly down there, going down with my buddy, the self-professed stats nerd, data nerd, John Camardo, who's been doing some writing for InTheMoneyPodcast.com, previewing the Keeneland meet. We're going to be there for the opening 3 days. Actually going to be doing a little meet and greet up on the hill on Saturday before the races. We've got JK, who's going to be in the mix. John will be there. I'll be there. We're going to hopefully have a little tailgate of our own in the midst of all the tailgating going on out at Keeneland. Hoping to be in the green room on Friday. I don't know. Is North Carolina Tony going to be around, or is he saving his juice? I think he's saving his bullets for the contest.
Yes.
Weekend.
Yes.
But it's always a great crew of horse players in there and all around Keeneland. One of my favorites, and I'm very happy to be on hand to kick it all off this weekend. Should be a lot of extra coverage up on our site, too. We're doing some specific shows. We're going to do an opening day show. We'll do a show for Sunday, obviously, and our main flagship show will be covering all the excitement on Saturday. But for a little while here, it's pretty close to all Keeneland all the time.
Nice. And there's a lot of people that, you know, that really focus on, you know, on Keeneland, whether it's the spring or the fall. I mean, and the fall, in a lot of ways, the fall is the, to me anyway, the more comfortable of the options, just because in the spring, that spring meet, you could turn up there and it could be 36 degrees with freezing rain, and you just you don't want to get out of the car. You know,
we've had a few like that. We've had some snow at Keeneland in the spring. So weather this weekend, you know, fingers crossed, looks like it's going to be amazing. I think it's a little bit of serendipity that the UK football team not playing on Saturday. I'm hoping that means the Hill will have a little bit of extra stuff going on. I think it should be a super fun weekend. The racing's unbelievable, and I'm just really looking forward to getting down there. I've told the story before, but when the Breeders' Cup was there in 15, I hadn't been in forever, and I vowed to try to get at least one visit every meet subsequently. And I did have one mishap last fall where I kind of had to choose between Keeneland and Breeders' Cup, and I went Breeders' Cup, but I've had my Kentucky trip twice a year since Breeders' Cup in 15, and I always enjoy the time down there. It's a great horse playing community, and obviously just some fantastic racing as well.
Well, look forward to it, and we'll get the report from you next week. Meanwhile, what's in the rearview mirror? Give us the recap from last week.
It's a lot of Santa Anita to talk about, Steve. A lot of people winning money, some really big weekends. Why don't we start off with the $3,000 win in your in challenge from Saturday, which was won by Michael Rosenthal. Built that bankroll up to over $22,000, and for that gets that coveted spot in the BCBC. $17,000 in prize money. And another cool thing they do at Santa Anita, because he was playing there on track, an additional $5,000 bonus. In second place was Eddie Logan, regular and contest stalwart Florine Sima. Florine picks up $7,400 in his BCBC spot. Third place, and this is one of those names I never know if I'm saying right, and I'm sure somebody listening, Joe Corey maybe, will send me a text later and give me the correct pronunciation of Ed Dake's last name, who was third, bankroll of $17,000, BCBC and $5,000. Tony Joe continues his success in the contest world with a fourth-place finish, 13 and change in the bankroll, for that 3,700 and a BCBC. Chuck Grubb, last year's BCBC winner, he may be rounding back into form. Finishes with 13 grand, the BCBC spot, and 2,900. Here's a fun one, Steve. In sixth place, Dick Girardi, who wins an NHC seat and gets over 12,000. And probably, he doesn't know this yet, but probably gets, that also means he's going to be pulled over to the side of the Bally's Ballroom and have to talk with us for a little while. He didn't know that came with his contest success on Saturday, but we'll make that happen. In seventh, it was Chris Podrath, who wins a credit for future Santa Anita contest because he's dual qualified at the NHC. And then in eighth and ninth, also winning NHC seats, Ryan Flanders, a name we'll talk about again when we get to Sunday, and Joe Rosen, the Stats Raceland user who made a big splash at last year's NHC. And that brings us to Sunday for the $500 opening weekend challenge, which was won by TVG's Scotty McKeever, who brought that bankroll up to nearly $6,000, gets BCBC for that, gets $6,000 in prize money and a $2,500 bonus for playing on track. And then other names, I mean, there's so many names, but these folks deserve their credit. Larry Kanishi, 4,700 score, BCBC, 2,400 prize money. Ryan Flanders, again, making it a nice weekend for him, 4,500 BCBC and a little prize money. Then rounding it out, Frank Matsuri, who gets that contest credit as a double qualifier. Same deal, actually, funny enough, for the next two. A lot of people double qualified already. Len Hansen and Paul Sherman in the mix. Tony Joe, again, getting an NHC seat, as well as Steve Hartshorn, who finished eighth and ninth, netting over $6,000 in bankroll and NHC. And then David Curry. Just you can see how many seats they're giving away out there at Santa Anita. And they really incentivize you to play on track. Obviously, the customer service there is phenomenal. And just another huge weekend. Lots of storylines. Interesting to see Paul Sherman with a minimum of scores might, at this point, I'll ask him, might be committed to trying to chase the NHC Tour again after that gutting defeat last year at the hands of Dave Guttfreund. I think it was the last thing he wanted to do, especially when he got his qualifications early. But now, by winning the Woodbine contest outright, there were a lot of people in this contest. I don't have the full number, but this has to be beaucoup tour points. It's going to be another interesting contest, contest story to follow between now and the end of the year with Paul Sherman. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's out at Keeneland. That's the next one coming up. Two contests at Keeneland, not opening weekend, but next weekend. A lot of people will be flying in to Lexington to participate in those, try to get those tickets punched if they're not already for the BCBC and NHC, and, of course, participate in that the cash in that prize pool as well. Keeneland, just another place that really treats the contest players the way they deserve and, as a result, is an annual stop for many of them.
Well, well done and to everybody. And the weekend ahead looks a little quiet on the on-site circumstance, but and everything will look toward Keeneland next weekend with 4 and 8 on Saturday and Sunday, a dozen opportunities there, and looking further ahead, Los Al on the 19th. And I did mention, Pete, as we were going to the break, the restricted company opportunity, the maiden qualifier on the 19th, and I think everybody should be those that have never qualified. This is one of those, again, one of those unique opportunities to get to NHC. And it'll be on the 19th. There's feeders already set up, and they might even add more feeders. So that news went out yesterday.
If you're eligible for that, you've got to play. And I know a lot of listeners are the ones who were able to sign up through the Beat Bic Challenge. All those people, don't just let that be your only chance to qualify.
Exactly.
You have an opportunity now to play against this restricted field. You already got in. If you already have the tour membership, I mean, come on. And hey, you know what? It's also not a bad opportunity if you want to go and check out what that horse player party is all about that you and I have so much fun at annually. Put up the 50 and play in this. The fact that it's restricted gives you, I think, very clearly a better chance than knocking heads with some of these more experienced players.
Did you recognize any of the names from the weekend, the free qualifier? I read them off on Monday, but I'll do it again. I had it on the side for you. Derek Deutsch, William Wolf, Carl Jacob, Christina Brockman, and Stephen Frankowiak were the five winners.
I don't know any of them. That's a good sign sometimes. It's nice to see some new blood getting involved. I always like a leaderboard when it's a mixture of the names we see all the time, the Paul Shermans, the Tony Joes, and then you see somebody new and get to figure out who they are, especially when they then become part of the contest world the way that, you know, Scott Coles and Matt Bagvolgi were named at last year's NHC that were like, I don't really know that name. And then to get to meet them and see that they're part of this next generation, if you will, of players and people I've gotten to know and have on the show and work with and become friends with. So it's always good to see those new names.
Well, for those that are starting to get antsy for the NHC, it's funny how many, you know, you mentioned the double qualifiers. It's interesting how many doubles there are. And then, you know, some of the prominent players that are still looking for their first. But of course, some people are also turning their attention right this minute to BCBC qualification. But of course the BCBC, if you don't win in, you can still go in the pocket for, you know, and put up the money. So it doesn't have the same, you know, I don't want to say desperation, but it doesn't have that same urgency. But
yeah,
certainly,
I think that's,
you know,
fair.
If you want to, if you can win an entry, obviously you don't have to go into your pocket. So, you know, it's a sizable piece of change, even if you're a big player.
It's a goal for a lot of players to qualify for that event. I think it makes it a little bit easier. I don't know if this is right or wrong in terms of gambling theory, but I do think it makes it easier to use optimal strategy when you've won your way in. Now, maybe some people look at it the opposite and say, hey, I won my way in, I'll play a little and put the rest in my pocket and go home. But if it were me, the ability to, you know, play in a no takeout Tuesday event on Horse Players and start my journey and win, I think for me personally, I'd be more apt to be able to treat it like Monopoly money, which, as we've seen, is the winning strategy in these live bankroll tournaments. But I think it's a point well taken. At least you can buy in. You can find a friend to go in with you. There's ways to make it work, even if you can't shell out the 10 to play in that yourself. But with the NHC, remains the only contest, you've got to win your way in. And that does create a special vibe at the event, as we've experienced. And it does mean you've got to really, you know, go, if you're serious about checking it out, you want to go to the NCRA website and take a look at the remaining opportunities. It's not desperation time. There are still opportunities, but it's not, if it hasn't happened already sort of by itself, I think you at least need to put some brain power towards figuring out how you're going to get yourself there.
And Pete, you'll be at Keeneland. I'm going to head down to Belmont for Saturday. And actually I think to on the music front, mentioned to you, going to go see the Avett Brothers on Saturday night at Barclays. Yeah.
Oh, they're fantastic, and that'll be a good venue for them. We saw them in. Come on, Brain. It's a famous venue, and this is terrible that I'm spacing on it in the Berkshires, where a famous outdoor concert venue.
Tanglewood.
Yeah, of course. I don't know what just happened to my brain, Steve. I need another coffee. And it was that was a couple of years ago. I don't remember if it was on a dark day or if we just left the races a little early and made the drive from Saratoga. And they put on a great show. They're one of Susan's favorite acts, and they will not disappoint. And I think Barclays will be a good spot. Let me know if you need any dining stuff around here. I don't know how sorted out you are for Brooklyn.
We'll see what happens. We're bringing Spencer and his roommates, and it should be fun. They're in Williamsburg, so we'll, you know, hustle over from Belmont after the racing's finished,
and looking forward to.
I've wanted to see them for a good long while, and actually another folk style group. That we champion here, Trampled by Turtles, is up here next Saturday.
You're kidding. Oh, wow. That's so cool. They're terrific live act. I haven't seen them, but I bought that live record, I think because of you, Steve, at some point either introing me or somebody else who played their Pixies cover, and I was like, what the heck is this? And I know they have a big following. There's a good following for bluegrass, really, in the Capital Region. One of a band that I love to see live, a local band who've also done some touring, the North and South Dakotas. I know those guys and their fan base, big Trampled by Turtles fans. There's a connection between them and the restaurant. It's not a restaurant. It's a beer bar, pint-sized, up on Broadway, and frequently being in there and hearing Trampled by Turtles. So I expect there'll be a devoted local crowd for that. I wish I could go. When is that show?
Next, whatever the, was that, the 13th? Is that the 13th? Yeah, the 12th. Next Saturday, and it's at this, I didn't even know it existed, in Clifton Park, the Capitol Music Hall?
I think, is that the new place associated with the Schmaltz Brewing fella who just, I think they're opening a venue. I think that is a new venue that's supposed to be cool. So that makes a lot of sense. That they'd be there. Fortunately/unfortunately, I'm going to be in Toronto, so I'm going to miss this one. But I got to get on that venue's mailing list if they're having acts like that. It sounds very cool.
Well, it's funny because I said to Tina last night, when I was getting the tickets, and we saw them first in Troy at the at the little at the bar and the famous the great chicken wing joint, and which was really the first time I had ever gone there. And I think the tickets were like $9 or $8, and the place is tiny. I mean, it holds you're literally sitting on top of the guys. And these seats, I think, are now that's up to like $30. I mean, so they've absolutely grown in stature and reputation, because they're to see them is three times what it was maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes, right? When that's success trajectory. I saw a crazy show the other when was it? It was last week. I just went up for the day to Albany Distilling Company, who somehow, along with WEQX, had put together a show with the New Pornographers. And it was like a special little showcase show. There were 40 people in the joint. And it was amazing to see an act that big in such a small place. And kudos to the station and to my friends at Albany Distilling Company for getting that to happen. I mean, that's a band I'm used to seeing with 1,000 people, so to be there with 40 was pretty neat. It's great to see the Capital Region really doing such great things with music. It's just it's already such a livable, wonderful place in the country, and that only makes it more special.
Well, I thank Leslie Knopf, who is literally a New York State Chamber of Commerce on 2 feet. Upstate Music Hall in Clifton Park, North Country Commons on Route 146. And it popped in my head. Ale House is the wing joint down on River Road, right, sort of not far from Bell and Napoli, the great bakery. So that's where we saw them first. That was and literally they were you couldn't believe how close. I mean, it's the place doesn't hold 40 people.
That's special when you get to see great music and you develop that bond throughout the career, when you get to see them that small and then you see them blow up. I mean, I know some people don't like that when the band they got to see with 40 people gets popular. That's sort of a famous thing that people will maybe get a little too hip about. But for me, I've always just taken it as reflected glory. Hey, I was cool enough to see them when they were 40 people, and I never begrudge them their growing and succeeding.
One of my favorite stories on that front was when I lived in Montreal. You'll love this. I lived in Montreal, and there we had a couple of friends that engaged in commerce that is now widely legal, but at the time was was generally illegal, and they had a delivery system which
they would send,
they would send out a courier on bicycle, and the Courier went out to Vancouver for like a summer, like it was like 6 months, then came back for the fall and the winter. And I'm going to forget his name. And I said, oh, how was it? You know, how was the trip? Oh, my God, it was great. You know, he said, you know, what'd you do? He says, well, I got really friendly with these guys that are going to hit it big. It's a band. They're from the Pacific Northwest. They're going to be huge. And I said, well, what's their name? He said, Green Day. And so about a year before Green Day sort of popped, we kind of were made hip to Green Day because of, you know, for that same kind of thing. And that's what you live for when you go into some obscure joint and you see a band or you know, and sometimes it's just one person sitting, you know, with a baby spot, singing and playing an instrument. Everybody's got, you know, that's the best part when you discoveries.
That's right. Music discoveries, what it is, what it's all about. And, well, truth be told, a lot of times I am listening to stuff that constitutes ancient history still. And it is fun sometimes to find an obscure record from the past, but it's great to know that there's still cool bands out there. And, you know, you're very good at staying on. I think you're better than me at staying on top of what's happening now. This is making me want to do another music show, Steve. I don't know. Maybe we'll rerun the Christmas show this year. Maybe we go back in there and spin some new tunes, too. I don't know.
Right. We can do
your
it.
Call, but
it's one of the shows, you know, kind of tangents, sidebars. Pete, have a great trip to Greenland. Anxious to hear the stories and some of the hijinks. I'm sure there'll be plenty. And the In the Money podcast, and you can listen and pick and choose your favorite and the topics and individuals you want to hear from at the website, too, if you aren't signed up for the feed, InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Pete, talk next week.
Thank you, my friend. We'll be talking soon.
Pete Fornatale, looms boldly, of course, on Twitter. Let's take a break, and we're about 15 in. Let's bring back Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. We'll wrap up the 2 days at Timonium, which seemed to go, you know, very nicely. A lot of regional bread, a lot of Maryland bread, Pennsylvania bread, New York bread, and, you know, and Florida, Kentucky slash. The scene shifts to OBS next week. And one of the things I perused the result page yesterday as Tina was unspooling Downton Abbey, there was a number of the pinhookers, and I'm always curious, you know, particularly of the young sires, who the pinhookers are latching onto. And Dave Scanlon, Carrie Fromer, etc. It's always worthwhile to go through and the Keeneland, you know, Keeneland and the middle portion of the, you know, obviously, you know, there's some high profile pinhookers that are spending, you know, big six figure numbers and trying to turn them into seven figure. But it's those bargains, you know, it's the smaller ticket. And particularly, not just new sires, but some of the even less heralded. So some of the first crop names. See if Sid sees some of the similarities. Back after this, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, Hill and Dale.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. Who you trying to impress, man? He keeps passing by.
We're back at the races, 25 into hour two. Spend the half hour with Sid Fernando, and I want to mention, too, underway at the horse park, the Thoroughbred Makeover. Getting going. And has become an absolute standard now on the calendar in the fall, and all the different categories, and all the off-the-track thoroughbreds has been a mammoth, just an incredible success. And it's created all kinds of, I don't want to call them imitators. That's not right. I don't want to take away from anybody that takes the initiative to, create retraining activity like this. But it's become really the national event. And, of course, last week, the Real Rider Cup that we talked about with Maggie Kimmett, at Fair Hill, and it was a big hit. And this is just really a convention. They've got a symposium on retraining as well now. It's become a national symposium, and now through Sunday, the Thoroughbred Makeover. So if you're in Kentucky, if you're in and around at the horse park, all these different disciplines, from polo to the show ring, and you name it, roping and cutting horse and barrel, you name it, the Thoroughbred Makeover, Jen Reitz and her staff.